interview is with Vernon, V-E-R-N-O-N-L, period, S-T-U-R-G-E-O-N, Vernon L. Sturgeon, Governor Reagan's legislative secretary or legislative representative, Sacramento, February the 7th, in his office, in the governor's office. Vernon L. Sturgeon.
Of it is, I hear from everybody, and I've gotten around to see about everybody now. I talked to Roy Simpson, who was superintendent, known. Dumpy this last week, too, and I've really made the rounds on it from Kennedy and Wilson on up. And a number of them suggested I should see you, and I think you were a senator there for the last 5 or 6 years. And many people say he's probably the most effective legislative lobbyist.
I think you could quite call Julian a lobbyist, even though he did lobby.
Yeah.
But he did this in the truest sense of an advocate. Was something that he believed in.
Yeah.
He took a little school down there. I don't recall what the enrollment was, but it was very small, like maybe 300. It was seriously being considered to for conversion to some other purpose. And at that time, as I recall, he was head of the Future Farmers or some such organization, something.
Right.
In California, and he took this on as kind of an additional thing. His first breakthrough that came, as far as the college was concerned, and Julian was instrumental in this, was in having the paramutual funds from horse racing allocated to operate Cal Poly. Well, when the horse racing took hold, it was soon apparent that Cal Poly couldn't possibly spend all that money, so then they had to take part of the money away, but Poly did have a constant growth, expansion. He instituted the upside-down theory of education, which teaches the person how to do it, and then the theory afterward. And I'm told by industry that students, comparable students, coming out of Cal Poly in this industrial field are at least 2 years ahead of the same student who would be coming out of university. I have no quarrel whatever with the university. They're oriented toward research and should be. But this was a school that he converted to one which teach young people how rather than why.
And I think that this word got around the state, too. This school did produce boys that could go out and take hold of the draft, like, still playing readily.
The minimum of industrial or engineering training after they got out of there. But he walked these halls. Of course, at that time, he didn't have a state college board. It was before the Donahue Higher Education Act was passed. And every college was pretty much on its own. And Julian did do his own advocate work here in Sacramento. And this was his great strength. These members learned to completely trust the man, and anything that he told them was the truth, whether it be adverse or whether it be good. And to the day that he died, he was held in extremely high regard in the Capitol. In fact, the governor last year, after he had retired as the president of not just one college, but two, made him a special assistant on higher education, and he was just fabulous in his work here with this governor's office. But one of his major contributions, maybe, was the founding of the Kellogg-Voorhees campus, and this was done by simply selling the Kellogg Foundation on the idea that they had an institution down there, or the site for an institution, that would fit in with this learn as you go concept. And that is in existence today now as one of our major state colleges all on its own. It's interesting that, to me at least, that he was able to continue effectively as president of both of those colleges until his retirement, and immediately we found it necessary to split. I think maybe that's the theory of the little boy picking the calf and putting him over the fence every day, and finally he's a full-grown bull and still lifting him over the fence.
Well, I was just interested, too. You mentioned that She was, she had built a reputation for telling her, giving men pretty much the truth and considerably advocating this, this kind of medication down there. And over the years, it really has grown to respect and support, et cetera. And as I take it, he, by and large, could gather legislative support for things that he wanted if they...
I've never known him in the 6 years that I was here to ever fail. He was very careful in what he asked for to begin with. It was justified, or he simply didn't come forward with it until it was justified. Came forward with a strong case, and over the years, well, the legislators learned to trust him and to believe him. In fact, I've had other members say to me that had this man devoted his energies or directed his life into private enterprise, he would have, through his own talents, been many times a millionaire.
Yeah,
and as it was, he built an institution that I guess is unparalleled anywhere in the world for the type of training that it does, for the benefit not only of all Californians, but they have an enrollment there from most of the states and many of the foreign countries of the world.
Yeah.
Have programs going in Thailand and Africa.
You say that right even till the end, he was still rather well known.
Oh, he worked right in this office,
exactly.
Right here in the governor's office.
Yeah.
Not all, always,
because
he was ill quite a bit that last year. But he was a welcome a member here. He helped us on higher education issues, on the budget.
He was on budget.
Budget, he was more out in front, but on the other issues, his voice was loud and clear. And again, it was because of my experience as legislative secretary here, my experience in the legislature, that I've learned to rely on him. And his recommendations were very, very heavy in this office.
As I take it, he didn't ever, Wilson told me this, he didn't ever try to gather a rather massive alumni write-in campaign. He did it one or two times. But usually his approach is more with personally in direct contact with men, wasn't it? Right?
Yes, it was. It was face to face, and also he was always careful to know more about the subject than the man he was talking to.
I take it this is one of the normal process, if I can use this word, that the legislature does have a confidence in a certain man who knows the topic and the subject and is willing to take his life.
In the last couple of years, after the state colleges were formed in a group as the university is, was not very often in Sacramento because then the state colleges spoke as one voice, and it would only be on specifics that he would be here.
Yeah, I knew that, and I sort of told you, sort of a little time for him to make the transition, and he brings you to working so directly. I was going to ask you, on and off the record here, I noticed, I heard somewhere that there was a little thought given, perhaps, and that he might be a name mentioned for the council. Is this a good story?
Yes, it was. I nominated him as senator from that district. I personally nominated him to Governor Brown. Governor Brown embraced the idea, and I think his supporters are rather indicative of the confidence that he held here. His supporters were the governor, the lieutenant governor, the speaker, but no concerted effort was made from anywhere else to sell the other members of that. Now, Governor Brown spoke of him as the ideal man for a transition period from the individual state colleges into a cohesive body. And the governor did support him, but I don't believe that the governor actively lobbied or attempted in any way to influence that board. And I think their mind perhaps was pretty well made up before his name was interjected. But yes, there was serious consideration for it.
Well, I said, this is an interesting point. Just want to see, the Governor Brown felt that he would be a good transition man.
Yes, in fact, the way he put it, he thought he would be an ideal man for the transition period.
Mm-hmm.
He was reaching retirement age, and obviously he wouldn't be on beyond that retirement age. And in the meantime, some younger man could be trained to take over the position.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that I get this story too, and maybe you mentioned it indirectly here too, that McCain ever used his position unjustly, let's say, or unreasonably try to favor Cal Poly in among the legislature, did he?
Not after...
But Cal Poly was his first love, there's no doubt about
Cal
that.
Cal Poly was his first love, and it was a case of dog eat dog, and everybody get what they could
right.
before the state college
right.
system was formed.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that he did
yeah.
use his influence to get whatever was necessary for Cal Poly.
Right.
And the other people had to go on their own.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it's a measure of this man's stature that he got more for Cal Poly than anybody else did.
Yeah. Along with this, I take it that perhaps this is true in some extent because of his extensive agricultural ties to the state for so many years.
Well, his alumni, he kept in touch with that alumni.
Yeah.
He had graduates in practically any key position that you'd want to think of in California.
Yeah.
So that was the type of people who went to California, to Cal Poly. It's a little country
yeah.
town, and they went there for an education, and there weren't too many diversions.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe that any institution in California has turned out a better group across the board than Cal Poly, and this is a direct influence of Julian McPhee.
Mm-hmm.
Julian, with his own staff at Cal Poly, was inclined to be pretty much of an autocrat.
Mm-hmm.
But he run that job. And the people now that worked under him are the people who are in control of the college, and it's going to be interesting to see what
yeah.
what happens there.
Yeah. I did wonder if you did not come in, the Enabling Act, you came in after that Enabling Act.
Well, I came in after the original Enabling Act,
yeah.
but I updated that Enabling Act
in
1961. So the
Act... Oh, you were here in 61. Right?
Yes.
That's right. I voted, I had to vote, you ran in 62, didn't you?
I ran in 60 and in 64.
That's, well, 64 that I was just asking.
Yeah, uh-huh. Okay.
So that's this Enabling Act.
That's my act.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Kennedy has told me quite a bit about this, Bob Kennedy, sit down and just let me say what he said, and I want to fill in or not, but find that McCain just insisted that this be in here for a number
mm-hmm.
of reasons. And board, et cetera.
All good things, I think.
Yeah. And
that was over the opposition of the state colleges.
Yeah, that's what Kennedy said, that at this point the legislation was just held up, period, until McPhee told me I stopped seeing 50 times for the pathway to the and he had a breakfast with a number of the gentlemen, and he said there was just an understanding that legislation was going to be held up until this was accepted. And, I was just wondering, you say yourself, you think you're right in insisting on this act?
Well, I have to admit my prejudice in favor of Cal Poly,
yeah.
but I think he absolutely did have a right. I think he had in his own conscience a mandate to do that because he was reaching retirement age. And with younger people coming on, he had a fear, and I think justified, that that college might become simply a rubber stamp of all other state colleges. He had no quarrel with other state colleges or what they were doing, but he had a strong feeling, which I share, that there should be one such institution in California held inviolate, as this one is now under the law.
And as I take it, he wrote this out all right. Kennedy said, well, there's quite a bit of hostility. The trustees, really, realize that this man did have some influence and power, et cetera, in the legislature, but I think he wrote this out all right, didn't he?
Oh, yes, he did. In fact, possibly, or two things. One, they couldn't help but respect his achievements. They couldn't help but admire what he had done. And at the same time, they were afraid of him. He had more votes in the Senate, particularly, than the trustees had ever had. And votes that simply relied on his judgment and trusted him. And that was with an experience of 30 years or more.
That's a good point. Don't the courts have mentioned that they relied upon him? That's an crucial point. But he could continue to show a great deal of influence.
That carried from administration to administration, incidentally. Mm-hmm. Well, he was a Democrat, I guess, all his life. He was a Democrat when he died, as far as I know. However, he was one of the Reagan administration's early appointments to a position. While it was unpaid, it did have great influence.
Yeah. So, give me that title again. Do you know what was this title?
Oh, I think it was a special assistant, or I think it was special assistant on higher education was the title.
Well, I take it you probably know this school well. I think it's Mr. McPhee, of course, no secret, he said it to PBL, was generally unhappy with the drift of state college system in terms of moving towards graduate degrees and
yes.
Seeking doctorates, et cetera, research funds, and
true.
Feeling that it was going to cost an extreme amount of money for the state college system. It seemed to me that McPhee was one of the lone voices standing out for the state colleges keeping particularly their function.
He had some very good reasons, which I personally have adopted for this office. Mm-hmm. I feel exactly like Julian McPhee did.
This is interesting from my standpoint. He's pointing out that let's say this continuing. So
it's still here.
It's still here in that sense. What's the gentleman's name that's here in the office now under the governor?
Dr. Sheriff.
Sheriffs, yes. What's his initials? Alex Sheriff.
Right.
Do you just have no faith? It's his, when you say this office, you mean the broader office?
This is a point I haven't had a chance to talk to Dr. Sheriffs about. He's going to get in here a couple of months. But I'm speaking of the legislative unit, and the legislative unit is the one that does influence the legislation.
Right. Yeah.
Whether or not it's introduced, whether or not it's supported, whether or not it's signed if it's passed.
You're talking about legislation generally.
That's
right.
No.
I maybe comment on this or not, but a few people have told me that when state colleges took over the unit in Central, Mr. Corn, the other day, up here, that they situated themselves down south. I think
John Muchmore was with him the first year.
Oh, I think you even thought it was a mistake in the first place not to be up here in Sacramento, but however that would be.
I'm not sure about that. I know that that had become a part of his life and one of the attractive parts of his life for over a period of 30 years, and kind of hate to give it up.
Yeah, right. I take it that the state college just sort of learned some of the things they were doing. Wilson just said, he knew wasn't the way to go about it. He just can't run up there and make a presentation and go home and set it. But be that as may, I was just interested in your comments saying that you did that.
It wouldn't be critical, though, of Muchmore or Cohen, either one. I'm much more left for another position after, I think, maybe 2 years. And Cohen had to start like 30 years after Julian McPhee to build the same reputation. And Les Cohen was very well regarded here. He was respected. He was gaining stature. But you can't come in as a baby and take on a man's chores and expect to get the same job done until you've learned your way around. But Les was a competent advocate for the state colleges, and he was well respected.
This one thing, I don't know whether you had any comment on it, but it's talking to McCorkle, Chester McCorkle. And he said, of course, I was interested in the what, you know, the whole San Luis kimono, wanting to keep those together, etc. And McCorkle said that a major part of this was to have a part of the school in a major population area that would have representation and support. Do you know anything?
Well, that came, I'm sure, much later.
Much
later. The legislature admired Cal Poly to the degree that he had repeated requests to establish branch campuses. Yeah. The latest one that I know anything about was, I guess it was up in Glenn County. They wanted him to establish one up there. One before that, the president pro tem of the Senate, I think his name right now, but he was from Imperial County. He insisted that a branch.
Yeah, I got the man's name.
The,
he set aside $1 million a year or so, didn't he, for a while?
Yeah,
of course.
For Imperial County.
Yeah.
The University of California at Riverside was originally a request for Cal Poly, and the university took it over because I guess it was more appropriate that they do. But he wasn't an empire builder in that sense. But I think the campus at Kellogg came about for a different reason. And I'm sure the reasons you mentioned it had to have a bearing. But that property was there. There was a start there. There were some buildings there. There was a breed stock of horses, which is still there. And the opportunity was there. And Julian had the ability to sell the Kellogg Foundation on simply giving that to the state. And that's part of their enabling act, incidentally. They do have the authority to accept gifts. But I don't think anybody would quarrel at all for the need of it there now, for the reasons that Dr. McCorkle is making. I think so. And incidentally, Julian McPhee, I understand, handpicked him and lured him away from Michigan State to take that job.
Yeah,
McCorkle
been with him quite a while. I remember
he said it. Well, maybe McCorkle was there longer.
McCorkle's been there quite a while.
Well, McCorkle
since 40. McCorkle goes way back in about 30.
Well, McCorkle, and I'm confusing McCorkle with the president down there now.
Kennedy.
No, at Kellogg.
Oh, Kramer.
Kramer's the one that he brought in from
Michigan
State. McCorkle then would have been one of the pioneers, along with Bob Kennedy and Harold Wilson and Dale Andrews.
He
some
was
of those guys.
Dean down there, I think, from about 56 on. It's a well-known story about McPhee fighting civil service and so forth for college and in his Depart Bureau of Agricultural Education over here, definitely wanting to know people in and out of his software, etc. And even the tenure problem with Cal Poly being quite late in the picture of granting were you on the tail end of any of that or not? I just wondered what
No, I was right in the middle of it.
You were right in the middle of it.
I carried the bill and sat beside Julian McPhee before the committees, and he testified in favor of giving Cal Poly people tenure.
Oh, is that right? Well, that's...
He had his full support at the end.
Yeah. This is about in 16...
Oh, it sounds like it must have been at about 63.
But in the... Yes, on this point, I have come out of time to prove to me that McCree didn't lose battles, as you mentioned. Dunphy's putting that in the generation side, and a few other people, including my father-in-law, have mentioned that if he was going against the trend, he saw the handwriting on the wall, so to speak, and never came out on the losing side.
I think that's true.
And, and in this sense, with just an expert strategist,
until his last days, he opposed academic senates so far as their insisting upon voicing the administration. He thought that professors and teachers should be teachers and professors and administrators should be administration.
Yeah, I knew he was really some concept. Dunphy had mentioned that he was the end of an era of hard-line direct presidents.
Yeah. He was, and he was, because I didn't know all of those presidents. In fact, I knew very few. But he was one of the strongest men in this century in California.
Well, I can see that, yeah. But Dumpy was so forth in Washington. Mm-hmm. He was generally a great educator, a statesman, but not in the fairness of Bob Sproul, but as you say, mm-hmm. important California. I am taking the theme, I don't know, you might evaluate it as right or wrong, major advocates of vocational education in the state. I don't know who would equal him in terms of time. And there are men who write that he had the institution he built. And,
I don't think anybody could come close to him in achievement.
Yeah.
One of his pet, which still exists, in fact, I guess it's now the only one in the United States, is a school for horseshoeing.
Yeah.
Michigan State had one, and I think that they've now dropped theirs, and that's the last
mm-hmm.
school. And that school is oversubscribed every year.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, he knew Hugh Burns, didn't he?
Oh, yes, very, very well.
I just, Mr. Burns is going to be out of town all week. I was in town. But I take it he didn't know Hugh Burns. But here again, sort of a direct relationship to the whole
situation. Hugh Burns, Senator Miller, Senator Stern, Senator O'Sullivan. The list is almost endless,
mm-hmm.
endless of people. Simply because Julian McPhee said it, they knew it was the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He didn't hesitate to phone them directly on things, et cetera, and so forth. But, what I mean was,
he
let them know by letter or phone how he thought on certain things.
Yes, he did, but he never deviated from the lines of protocol. He always went through his own senator.
Yeah, right.
He was a fellow in the matter of protocol. I've never seen his equal.
Mm-hmm.
I recall one year the Senate Ag Committee was out checking capital appropriations, and we went one day to Fresno State, and they had a nice luncheon, cold cuts and fruit and so forth, and one of the senators said, well, let's see if Julian McPhee can top this. And the next day we were at Cal Poly, and we ended up with New York State's with the ornamental horticulture in the middle of the table, and everybody laughed and said, well, yes, we're going to get top. But he always thought of the little things. He might overhear a conversation about somebody who was in trouble or who had a happy occasion,
mm-hmm.
and he took the trouble to send a letter, some flowers,
mm-hmm.
or make a phone call. It was the little things that this fella did that endeared him and that softened you'd have to call him a hard man because he always had a purpose, but he did it in such nice ways that he did not offend people.
Mm-hmm. One other thing, you mentioned this one relationship with Governor Brown. Are there any other... I know Brown had visited the campus a few times. I just wonder if offhand you knew how Brown evaluated the work. Of course, he sent a fine letter when he retired. I didn't know if I'm sure he's quite busy and didn't have much time. I just wondered if there were any other point at which he and his team might have touched the rest
of the recall, this must have been in about 1963. There was some kind of a three-man board, and I don't remember all the details, but I know that there was one man from labor, one man from business.
Agricultural Labor Commission.
All right, and Julian McPhee was that swing vote. And Julian was hand-picked by Governor Brown to do that, and he sat in the middle between the two, and nothing really ever much came out of that. And the only reason I mention the incident is because Governor Brown did hold him in that high regard.
The agricultural labor report from the commission. Well, I don't thank you very much. There's anything else just offhand that made your highlight or emphasis I could put in about him as far as your legislative relations? I don't think here lately in the last part he was much concerned with national legislation. I do know they could always count on his support from Washington on vocational bills, but this was back in the 50s.
I was never involved in that.
Yeah.
There was one other man here who, in a completely different way, I think measured up to him in his legislative status, and that would be Jim Corley.
Oh, yes.
Who for many years was the vice president of the university in charge over here.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a different relationship, where Jim was more of a mixer on a personal basis, go fishing with fellas and this sort of thing, and I've never known William to do that. But I think they were probably equally effective unless they clashed.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the university and Cal Poly often did clash up until recent years. And I think it would be fair to state that Julian won more than his share of those battles with the university. One of his major problems in forming that school was in finding teachers who were qualified. And for many years, the university refused to train teachers for that type of school. And that's the reason for the wide diversity of geographic basis that that staff comes from. They came from everywhere. And Julian personally recruited most of those people, again, until the last 10 years. He'd go anywhere to find his qualified teachers for that school. Now, in recent years, the university does train people who work in schools, such as Cal Poly.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't want to ask about the student. I realized almost, McPhee had almost become a spokesman, as I say, for the university in the last 2 years within the system in regard to functional state colleges, but I do know this whole long, drawn-out battle between competition and, and
course. Just a suggestion, I'm sure that Jim Corley could add some interesting anecdotes to their relationship, because they usually were head-to-head.
Yeah.
Until the last years, and yet they were dear friends.
Yeah, you don't know where he's retired, do you?
No, Jim Corley's here in Sacramento.
He's living in town.
Yes, he represents now, and he was fired by Clark Kerr because he agreed philosophically with Julian McPhee, although I'm sure it was never put in that context.
Right. Yeah.
But, you probably could find him on the third floor this afternoon.
C-O-R-L-E-Y.
James Curley.
Third floor here? Mm-hmm.
Up in the hall.
Oh, is that right? So he's working for somebody else?
Yeah, he works for, I think the Kern County Land Company.
I may give him a ring if he's in the phone book tonight.
He probably is. And I'm not sure if he lives down around the bay
okay.
and works up here or if he lives
okay.
up here, but he is here.
He's probably being phone book.
I would think so.
Yeah. I'm going to see you then,
Find him. There's a lobby service up there somewhere.
Oh, okay.
We'll find him up there.
Okay. I'm going to be meeting Terry Wellman this Friday. You know, Wellman is vice chancellor. And he and McPhee did know each other in long. I think they're in the very long time.
Well, right until last, William didn't mind fighting with those people.
Yeah,
he did.
I understand that. Well, he was trained up and he was kind of ground and
yes. Because of his stature, I think it would be a fair statement to say they were afraid of it.
I remember people said the university, they weren't sure they realized the extent that they had a competitive person in the
school.
Well, I thank you very, very much.
I hope that.
Interview with Vern Sturgeon, Sacramento, February 7th, Governor's Office, Dale Moody doing the interviewing. Senator Vern Sturgeon, who is now Governor Reagan's legislative secretary, or legislative representative. told me that I should check with Jim Corley, C-O-R-L-E-Y. This interview is with Lewis, L-O-U-I-S, S, period, Merrill, M-E-R-R-I-L-L, General Manager, Western Fairs Association, Incorporated, in Sacramento, February 7th. Whether you'd want me to try and get together with you tomorrow, if it'd be possible. Yeah, that's fine. I would just, if you don't mind, I'd like to record it for my notes, and if there's something you don't want to say, well, don't say it or tell me not to say anything about it. But, yeah, just sit down. Yeah, I understand, of course. My father-in-law teaches down there, and so I've been talking with Kennedy, and I was around seeing Simpson today and a lot of other people, and so interviewing quite a bit of people. But I understand you primarily were involved with the fair funds with him, the Western Fair Association, is that right? Could you, just briefly, about when did you get to know Julian so I could sort of peg in the time that you knew him and all that?
Well, when I first knew him, he was a BOAC teacher, I believe, at Merced, Madera. That was back in 1925.
Oh, yeah, way down Gilroy, right.
Well, there was lots of showing livestock and down at the, what is now called the Great Western. It was in the Far Western Livestock Show.
Yeah.
And him, Dr. McPhee, then Julie McPhee, of course, and I believe G.I. Thompson, who just passed on.
Right,
was
yeah.
One of the judges down there, and I had some steers to show, and I met him then.
Yeah.
Of course, I met him officially, more or less, when I was president of the Fresno District Fair in Fresno.
Oh, I see.
In 1937.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
38, 39, and 40.
Yeah.
And we began discussing at the fair level, along with a man by the name of John Knezovich, who was a personal friend of Judith. He was a soldier of fortune, you might say, and a PR man for Hollywood Park.
Yeah. Well, how do you spell that name?
K-M-E-Z.
Yes.
E-D-I-C-H.
Oh, thanks, yeah.
Palos Verdes Journal.
I see.
I don't know whether he's still alive or not.
Yeah.
We used to go over to Cal Poly. All of the fair managers did because we were looking for our judges.
Yeah.
And our people that could help us in agronomy.
Yeah.
And in judging.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we just became acquainted through that line. And he showed a keen interest, as Dr. McPhee did, in the development of fairs and expositions.
Yeah.
First, at the rural level,
mm-hmm.
he later changed in later years.
Yeah.
But he wanted the fairs to be independent of state control.
Yeah, I see.
And he wanted the fairs to be teach by doing the same as they were doing at Cal Poly.
Right.
That is where we would make demonstration units with the livestock. He was the first one to recommend that we bring in junior judges to aid the senior judges, so as to educate the boys that were making the decisions to be able to make those decisions and give them verbally to the public for public education.
Right, I see.
He was the first one to, as I know, understand, to give us encouragement. He came to our meetings. I'm trying to think back. I think it was just before the war.
Yeah.
And started the program of BOAG work with the idea that reports, your schedule book.
Record books.
Be judged along with the project. That was new in California.
Yeah.
They were not doing that elsewhere then.
Oh, I see.
And we adopted it. And Dr. McPhee, I think it was 1945. I was in the Army, and I went down to California to see him quite often.
Yeah.
And he suggested we start a college of fairs.
Uh-huh.
I don't know whether he suggested or we did, but anyhow, right after the war was over, we held the first Congress, you might say, of fair managers in the United States at Cal Poly. That was held on December the 10th, 15th, 20th, I believe, of 1946.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And we brought in about 150 people.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them returnees and held a short course.
Mm-hmm.
Ann Bard Shepherd, Dr. McPhee, people from Davis and others participated in this first course.
Right.
And he suggested at that time all members of his staff, and we have arranged and hold a judge's conference on the basis that the judge of the livestock show, and this is what we're talking about, is the man that determines where approximately $3 million of state money goes each year. And so the first judge's school for judges in California and probably the nation was held at Cal Poly, and I believe we started the first judge's school in 1947. And it's still continuing. It may be cut out this year in the governor's budget. But we ran it for, and in the name of Cal Poly, Western First Cal Poly, for a number of years. Now, of course, Dr. McPhee was very interested in, when he first started, naturally, Cal Poly, on the Foreign Exposition Fund. Frankly, had he had to submit a budget to the legislature at that time, he would have probably not gotten one-third of the money that he finally got. Because he didn't have the students per capita. He was not under the same system as the other colleges. And the Foreign Exposition Fund gave him some $47 to $55 million. I forgot the
exact you're
difference.
Talking about what years now? About 38?
I'm talking from
from
38 on, as a matter of fact. And Cal Poly had, was a result of the legislature holding a special meeting in 1942. Because horse racing was not being conducted during the war. And they had to have a special session of the legislature to appropriate money on the general fund for Cal Poly.
And you say then about how much...
I've got it in the office. It's not with me now, but it's around $57 million.
I'll be darned, over the years. That has ended now, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. That ended in 1958.
58, yeah.
Matter of fact, the college got so big that they no longer could be dependent upon what might happen to the whim of the racing industry. But previously, that whim was the will of steel. Because they got much more money than had they been in the general fund. Because the money increased, and we get the same thing. The fairs got so much money that it's a criticism that I induct against ourselves, but sometimes we didn't use it wisely because we were fed, trough fed. But he got a lot of money, and he was smart.
Was he instrumental in helping get that bill through initially or not?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, I didn't know.
I never recollect that Dr. McPhee was instrumental in any way that I've heard in the original legislation. But the minute he heard about it, and the minute that it got, became acceptable in 1935 and 6, man, he was alert from then on. That's where you got the names of all those buildings down there. They were named after heads of the Department of Finance. Chairman of the GE committee or something. He was a good lobbyist. And the reason he was a good lobbyist, he invited people to come down and see his work.
On this, these fair funds, too, I going over a lot of these papers, I noticed letters to yourself or to other people. He's very intent on protecting those funds from other people who would like to in on those.
He came to the legislature many times to help us. When it might have hurt him, but it didn't make any difference.
Is that right?
It would be him that, in the belief that if, I think he may, must have foreseen, and the last time I saw him was at the state fair last year, we talked about this, and this was, of course, after he'd become ill. And I know he had a terrible regret in his background and mental makeup for the reapportionment program. He thought agriculture would come out second.
On this, then, just to bring it up, I noticed he was elected eventually to the Hall of Fame of Western Fairs, et cetera, and I was just wondering if you could sort of evaluate the real importance of him in fair work and as far as the fair people were concerned in vocational education in the state.
He was a leader in our field from the educational standpoint. He was an exponent of fairs. He understood what they were for. When he went to a fair, he didn't just go into the director's room and get acquainted. He went out and shook hands with the kids that were participating. He encouraged livestock contest and training at judges' schools.
Now, let me, he did talk, about when was the great growth of fairs? Could I ask that?
Well, the greatest growth of fairs that ever occurred in California occurred between 1935 and 1945.
And 45. And in this period, he was really getting his vocational agricultural education program in high gear.
That's right.
And I suppose he tied these together.
They all
and
coincided.
And, fine.
He wrote a forerunner for a book that we have called Livestock Biographies. And in it, he said that the greatest growth in the state of California in the advancement of agriculture agricultural business management, livestock growth has been dated with the passage of the Horse Race Act of 1934 and the growth of the agricultural colleges.
I think.
Somewhat
yeah.
similar to that.
Right? Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Now, he was, of course, Ewing was very personable, you know.
Yeah, right.
He was a dynamic character.
Mm-hmm.
He knew a lot of our people.
Mm-hmm.
And he was insistent that we hire a lot of these people. That's why we still have a course in California that we teach down there, AB 211.
Yeah.
And FM.
Yeah.
I mean, we...
Right.
I think we've got 18 or 20 graduates of Cal Poly in our firm business.
Yeah. As I take it, then, he, not only with your group, but with other agricultural groups, he certainly tried to make Cal Poly a service to them, and in return, appreciated the complete support that was given to the schools, I take it.
Well, we used to put it a different way. We could honestly do it, and we always were a little bit hesitant about asking for something, because he would give us so much more than we really wanted.
Right. Yeah. Well, say, I really appreciate this very much, and... I got to see him a couple times before he died, and I've been working on this for about a year, and sort of at the end.
I have all of these speeches that he made at our meetings for the last 20 years.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Kennedy wrote about half of them.
Yeah, I know. I've got a lot of them that Kennedy wrote, so I probably have some
you
of those.
Probably got, because I used to talk to Bob and who was Servatius and others.
Say, I wanted to ask you, you're general manager, or you were general manager.
I still am.
Still, you still are. What are the dates on that, just for my footnote?
How long have I been managing?
Yeah, with the Fair Association.
I've been with the Fair Association since May the 1st, 1945.
Is that right? Okay, well, I thank you very, very much, and if I should have a specific question, well, I might drop you a postcard now.
Okay, glad to answer.
You bet. Thanks a lot. Okay.
26.
All right, fine. And that'll be fine. I'll get a hold of him over there then. Yeah. All right, fine. Thanks a lot.